Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. It's me, Rob, from the YouTube channel Moto Bob, and I'm joined by Tim. How's it going?
It's good. It is going well. You sound very gleeful today, which is good.
I just feel in a good mood because we're doing the podcast. I've been really enjoying it recently, so...
That's nice.
Yeah, it's all good. I thought we'd jump back in today with some new stories. We did the same last week. Just some of the stuff that I haven't covered on the main channel, but the ones that caught our eye. And the first one is the fact that the MV Agusta Super Veloce 1000 is now production ready. Cycle World reported on this one, saying that it will be rolling through the factory soon, and they are going to release them in Q3. This is the Seri Oro limited edition version, which is their highest end, like super premium sub-brand. Q3 of 2024, they'll be in dealers. And it's basically this bike, a love child of the fantastic Brutale 1000RR inline four that makes over 200 horsepower that both myself and Tim rode out in Italy from their factory last year or the year before?
Probably the year before, actually, yeah.
Yeah, time flies. The love child of, wait, not that experience, not the love child of me and Tim. It was the love child of the Brutale 1000RR and the Super Veloce 800. But this combination, mate, is very special. And I would probably go so far as to say that I think it is one of the most beautiful motorcycles ever made, in my opinion. And I was wondering, if not the, it's really up there for me. I was wondering if you shared the same opinion.
Yeah, it's as with anything where you're like, oh, give me the best of all time. It's really, really hard. And you'd want to limit it to like 5 or 10 even. But it's absolutely in the top 10 for me. Yeah, it's stunning. I don't know what to sort of describe it in comparison to the old Super Veloce, the 800, but a bit beefier, maybe, just a little bit sort of chonkier.
Yeah, I mean, there's the fact that you've got more cylinders, so naturally it's going to sit a little bit wider, yeah, I suppose, a four versus a triple. I'd agree, it definitely looks a bit more girthy. I think it's also the fact that it's the Super Veloce, but...
Yeah.
On steroids, if you will, or more inspired by the Brutale 1000RR, which is more swooping lines and curves, and it just looks like it's on a race program. It's got winglets, which are a bit MotoGP inspired. It's got the carbon disc covers down the bottom, again, race inspired.
Yeah.
But it's just got details everywhere you look.
Yeah.
The little quadruple exhaust poking out under the saddle, and
it's quite
the wheels, mate. Have you had a look at the wheels?
Yeah, I have a look. I mean, what you know is you look at the bike and then you sort of look a little bit further and you notice more details. You get this sort of, there's the initial impact that you get with it, and then you study it a little bit further, and it's a really, really fine balance between putting more details on without making it look busy or cluttered, which I think is just brilliant design when it comes down to it. That's the definition of brilliant design, is if you can put all these extra details on and it not detract from the sort of overall silhouette.
Yeah, then you've nailed it.
Basically.
What about that single-sided rear wheel, though? Is it, I mean, it must be cast aluminium, but are they little spokes wedged in there as well?
Yeah, it looks like it. Little red spokes in between the actual cast wheels. As a little flourish.
Just the details, mate.
It's incredible. Yeah, it really is. If you look at the tail section, you've got the extra, you've got that hump on it, obviously, which, and that stop, which obviously stops you sliding off the seat, which on a bike like this probably is a prudent decision. But you've also got that extra little trim. It's almost like a spoiler on the tail section, but it looks so good. The overall silhouette of it, for me, you know that definition when someone says that something looks like it's doing 200 mile an hour standing still? This really does look like it is doing some serious
speed. That is a fair comment.
Just standing still. Yeah.
Yes. It's funny with the winglets. I thought they looked gross when they first came out on some of the bikes, like the Fireblade. Not the Fireblade. It was more the Ducatis that had them first, I think. I was just like, what are those? They look terrible. But now they've become a bit normalized. And you were just mentioning what looks like, I mean, it's not really like aero, it's more a piece of design. Yeah. But I was thinking, have you seen the KTM bikes, the MotoGP bikes, where they're testing a rear spoiler? And then also there's one where they're testing a tiny winglet spoiler thing right on the leading edge of the front mudguard, which is the most marginal of marginal gains.
Right.
But I'm concerned, basically, because I feel like the side winglets have become normal to my eyes, and I don't ever want a tiny winglet on the front of the mudguard or one on the back of the seat.
I've just seen the one on the rear seat, yeah, or on the where the
it's massive,
seat
isn't it?
It's bigger than I thought it would be. Yeah, not good.
Nah, I hope not. Anyway, this bike, you know, as I said, could be right up there for me in terms of the best of the best. But are there any other candidates that you would say make for the best designed or most beautiful motorcycles in history?
In history, in recent memory, I think Ducati gets a real big mention for things like the Devil, and things like the Panigale V4 for me actually is really nice for silhouettes.
Very nice indeed.
I've seen what your suggestions are, and I do definitely agree with at least two of them. I'm not sure about the other one actually.
Well, I was thinking back to, you know, in history, what are some of the best looking bikes? The 916 is like the benchmark.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to compare these two side by side. The MV's a lot more modern. The 916 is like classic, timeless lines. But probably most people, I'm going to say, are going to say that the 916 is a better design than this. I think this might be too busy for some people. What's your take?
Yeah, the 916, yeah, there's something really nice about simple, clean designs. There is a balance to how much stuff you can put on it before it's playing buckaroo and you've thrown too much stuff at it. But yeah, I can see the argument for the simpler, cleaner lines of the 916 being better, yeah.
I also think there's some of those classic bikes, Ducatis, and I noted down the Kawasaki Z1 as being a real iconic looking bike. Mm. We made some show notes before. And one that I put on there was the Honda NC30.
Yeah.
And that's the one you're not agreeing with.
No, that's the one I agree with. I love that.
Oh, which one was it then that you didn't agree with?
It was the Kawasaki Z1 where I was like, I looked at it, I was like, I think I could find nicer of that era. I don't think it's one of the ones that sort of stands out to me.
What, like a Bonneville type thing is more pleasing to your eye?
Yeah, to me. That some of the, you know, Nortons and the Bonnevilles and stuff like that, for me, look a little bit nicer. But yeah, the NC30 is definitely in my list.
Yeah, something like that. Those sort of 80s, 90s sports bikes. I mean, that's pretty much like a peak example of getting that right. Mm-hmm. But I actually think the MV might beat that. I think it's only the 916 I could think of. I was also thinking as well, just around like naked bikes, what's the best looking naked bike ever made? I'm not just saying this because you just bought one, but I was thinking about the Ducati Monster.
Yes.
Honestly. For real.
Nice. Yeah, no, and that's justified, yep.
I think maybe even the S2R that you bought is like the best version of it as well.
Yeah.
I was really thinking about it. I was like, it's not like me maybe to be so positive about your Italian motorcycle choices.
No, this is refreshing.
I think you might have nailed it.
Thank you. It definitely, there is a vote in there for it being one of the prettier looking monsters in my eyes, yes. There is one thing, which is the catalytic converter, I think is a massive down point, but it's very easily remedied. So once you fix that, actually, it's really nice.
Is it under the back, sort of?
Yeah, it's
down under the swing arm.
Yeah, near the swing arm, yeah, exactly. It basically looks like a cow's udder, and that is an accurate description of it, and it needs to come off immediately. And has on mine, luckily, so we're all good. But yeah, I think the proportions of it, and it's such a delicate balance, just make it look beautiful to me, yeah.
What's the best looking bike you've ever owned?
Owned? Oh, I don't know, man. It's like choosing your favourite child. For me, one of my Motegutsis probably would be one of my prettiest bikes, I would argue. But I can see
V7.
Yeah.
The white one.
Yeah. There's something about the V7, and I tweaked a little bit of it, so it was a little bit cleaner than stock. I personally really like that. But it's down to your taste, isn't it? It's such a subjective thing. What's your prettiest bike? What's the one you've owned that you like most?
Well, I'm not saying prettiest, but like the coolest looking one was definitely when I had the Street Twin with the stupid big blocky tires on it. It just looked completely badass. Yeah. Handled like a dog. I'm pretty sure as well the bumpiness of the knobbly tires, they were the Continental TKC80s, so quite off-road focused. Yeah. The knobbliness on the front, I'm sure, like messed up the bearings as well in the steerer. Uh-huh. Headset bearings, but still it did look great. Later on I sort of fitted different parts and made it a bit more street biased again, but for just like tearing around London on for something that looked a bit Mad Max-esque with those tires on, yeah, I really like that. Although I did tell you actually recently I'm in the throes of customizing my SV650.
Yes.
And my goal is to make that look better than the Street Twin, and then I can finally rest and be at peace with myself. I'm making good progress as well. Like, okay. I say, I've got a headlight housing on, headlight brackets, little fly screen. So it's an SV650S. I've completely removed the little half fairing that was on it. Yeah, I'll have to post up some pics or something at some point. But it's almost like when you're doing something like this, you don't want to show too much of it, because I'm not like a build channel where I'll show progress. So I'd rather just keep it to myself until it's done. So I don't want anyone judging it in its half-cooked form.
No, there's no judgment online. The internet is not a place for judgment.
Sure. Anyway, well, that does it, mate. I think it's right up there, but perhaps the 916 is the pinnacle. Let us know in the comments, everybody, which one you would go for, or if there's something we missed. I'm sure there's loads of bikes we missed that are definite candidates. Sure. But moving swiftly on, one of the stories that caught my eye earlier this week was the fact that Cake electric motorcycles, super modern and unusual looking, I think they filed for bankruptcy. I think they were looking for more funding, basically, because they're in startup mode where they need these rounds of funding to keep going, and they didn't find it, so they filed for bankruptcy. And it's a kind of interesting one, mate, because it's got me questioning, are electric bikes even viable for companies to produce at the moment? It seems like they were operating at a loss. I think Zero operate at a loss as well. And also, if you look at things like Livewire, when Harley launched that, it didn't really go that well, and they spun it out into a separate brand and kind of put it to the side. I mean, what is it? Why is it just people aren't buying them? Or
has to be. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'm going to go into this as a completely ignorant audience member to business. I don't know the finer workings of business, but it must just be that they're not getting the same sort of demand at the moment, which is why I think with cars or just electric companies in general, I think they're at their strongest position when they are partnered with an already established brand. And then it's, you know, you can take a risk on an offshoot rather than just a complete startup, which is obviously quite hard to build something up from zero. I think it must just be that there's just not the demand for bikes as there is for cars, because you do see loads of electric cars on the road, but just I very rarely see. You know, it's quite a novelty when you're riding past, you go, oh, electric bike, and you actually see one in the
finally
wild.
Finally, somebody.
Yeah, you don't see them very often at all.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And also, they've got to be super R&D intensive at the moment. Even though they're kind of simple, aren't they, electric bikes? Just a battery and a motor slapped into a motorcycle chassis. It's not rocket science.
No, so when's yours coming out?
No, it is difficult. I'm sure it... yeah. That's what I'm doing with the SV.
Oh, I see, right, yeah.
It must be fairly expensive to get started, and then it just doesn't seem like the sales volumes are there at the moment. But I think it's a real shame for Cake, because I walked past their stand at EICMA this year, and it looked really impressive. They've just got all manner of weird and wonderful looking bikes.
True.
The more utilitarian, urban type things.
Yeah.
But recently they came out with the Buck, I think it's called, which is more like a dirt bike, enduro bike type thing, but in their typical silver and minimal Scandi styling, and I was like, wow, that looks pretty smart.
They're very unique looking. For me, it really comes down, it just does not make any logical sense to go for the electric bike at the moment. I think a lot of people who are riding bikes, unless you live in one of these high rises where you've got somewhere to plug it in overnight, you can't really leave outside your house. It's not like you can street park it and still charge it. So where are you going to charge the thing? And they cost more. If you look at Cake, as great as they are, and I did do a bit of research because I was like, maybe that would work for my commuting into London, they're like twice the price of an equivalent sort of speed, power, capacity kind of motorcycle. When I look at, I could get a Husqvarna 401, or I can get a Cake for twice the price. It just doesn't make any sense for me. So maybe there's that.
Do you know what I feel a bit sad about as well? Yeah, naturally the price is going to be a big factor. We were saying this last week with the Honda announcement, they're going to build more and more electric bikes by, was it 2035? They had loads of goals for how many they're going to produce and how profitable they'll be, how many they'll sell. We saw with Kawasaki when we went to Motorcycle Live, they had two electrics, two hybrids, is it now?
Yeah.
And it feels like the, as you say, the big guns can come in now and possibly afford to develop them and yet sell them at a more reasonable price point. And so all these companies like Cake and Zero, who have to get rounds of funding and they can't afford to sell the bikes at a comparable cost to a normal petrol bike, are kind of falling by the wayside as these big companies just sweep in and do it their way. And maybe that's a bit of a shame, because we had some cool and interesting stuff from the likes of Cake and Zero to some extent. I wouldn't say they were, you know, quite as stylistically impressive or interesting as the Cakes. But yeah, maybe it's going to go more mainstream and we'll just get electric versions of a CB125 now for $8,000 or something like that.
Probably.
But that's effectively what Kawasaki have announced, isn't it? Z-E1 and the Ninja E1 or whatever it's called. So it's a bit of a shame. But anyway, Speaking of Honda and their new motorcycle developments, I just had to include this story. I mean, I saw the headline, which said on Cycle World, we're getting a lot of stories from them the last couple of weeks, but it is an excellent website. Honda developing GB350-based Himalayan rival. And the GB350 is a really cool looking little single cylinder retro type bike that they sell in Asian markets, but they don't sell here. And so I was like, oh, it's such a shame we don't get that bike. Saw that headline and thought, wow, they're going to make a single cylinder little adventure bike that does a similar job to the Himalayan. That makes a lot of sense for their Asian market aspirations. But maybe we'll get it and we'll get a nice little mini Honda adventure bike. Clicked on the story. I mean, have you looked at it, mate?
Yeah, I genuinely thought that was the Himalayan.
I did the same thing.
I thought that that was the Himalayan and they were going to show that design, and then down below was where Honda's was going to be. And then I sort of read a little bit further and went, oh my good God, that is exactly the same looking.
It's absolutely wild, isn't it, how similar it is. Yeah. I did the exact same thing. I was like, why are they showing me a picture of a Himalayan at the top of the article, scrolling down, looking for something else specific to the Honda? But OMG. I mean, there's so many points at which you could pull out similarities to the Himalayan. Obviously, with a single cylinder, semi-retro styled adventure bike, there's going to be some proportional similarities anyway. But I'm looking at the little metal frame around the headlight and down the front of the side panels.
Yeah.
The side panels themselves, the shape of the tank, the shape of the seat, the split seat design, the shape of the side panels, even like the windscreen area looks kind of similar. It's got me thinking, oh, Honda, I mean, is that not embarrassing for them?
Well, it depends where they're going to launch it, right? Because if the GB is something that they only really sell in the Indian market, then maybe they're all too sort of familiar with it and it's less of a kind of taboo. But yeah, possibly, I don't know. Depends. If they're going to do this in sort of mass market and sell it worldwide, then yeah, maybe a little bit un-Honda-like, like, to just copy someone's design.
Yeah, I didn't think I've ever seen that before from Honda. It's not like their MO to just go and copy bikes.
No.
But I mean, the thing that's even more, well, that rams it home a bit, is if you scroll down and they've got a scrambler version of it.
Yeah, yeah, Scram 411.
And it looks like the Scram 411.
Yeah, literally, yeah. Yeah.
There's only so far you can kind of go with a certain genre or bike. It just looks too familiar and too similar that it seems like a blatant copy. And that's what it's got me kind of like wondering about is, well, where is your design style and your core offering? You know, what's your Honda-ness? In the same way that there are sort of styling similarities in lines of cars like BMWs over the years with the kidney grills, and they just evolve it into different shapes or whatever. It's like abandoning what makes a Honda, and just doing what Royal Enfield do, which is that classic retro style that pretty much is part of most of the bikes that they build. Maybe not the new Himalayan, it looks a bit less like that. And just being like, yeah, okay, this is our version of it. I don't know, mate. I thought Honda was about getting like something that's a really quality build, that has a great finish, slightly modern styling sometimes, although for the GB I suppose that's less of the case. But it still looks like its own thing. Even the GB 350 doesn't look like a Enfield Classic 350 or Meteor 350 ripoff. It's really obviously a Honda.
No, it looks like, it looks like a classic Honda. They've got loads in their kind of back catalogue that it replicates. And it's really pretty, actually. It's a cute looking bike.
Isn't it just?
Yeah. So, yeah, really odd.
It could be a masterstroke, mate.
It could be. Mate, I feel like someone's just, they've been asked to submit a design and it's gotten down to the wire. And they've kind of gone, oh God, what am I going to do? And they've just gotten some tracing paper and gone over it.
Oh, geez.
Himmy.
Do you know what that gave me an immediate flashback of?
What, being in school?
Yeah, my homework strategies at school.
Yeah.
How's that motorcycle design coming? Oh, nearly done. It is nearly done. I'll bring it in tomorrow and then, like you say, trace it.
Yeah.
And then get it back on the normal paper. No one will know the difference. I love the way that they've labeled it as well. That's like with all the numbers, 19, 18, 24. I imagine the key for all these numbers just says Himalayan wheels, Himalayan headlight, Himalayan mirrors.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it could be a masterstroke, like I say, because if it's such a popular bike in India and they sell in huge volumes, for example, then just make something similar. And you'll also sell in huge volumes, especially if you can undercut them or make it slightly more powerful or something like that. But I just feel like I never look at Honda like that. If it was like, like a Chinese copy of a bike or something, like we see that occasionally, it wouldn't surprise me so much. But man, let us know what you think in the comments, people who are watching on the full episode YouTube version. Is it embarrassing? Does it look similar? Which would sell better as well? Do you think if they copy it, people are just going to be like, ugh, why have you just copied the Himalayan? I'm just going to buy a Himalayan instead. Anyway, my friend, moving swiftly on, we're on to comments of the week. A new regular segment, because it's the second time I've done it. So that makes it regular, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very regular.
And this week I've pulled out, we had a section in a recent podcast where we were talking about loud exhausts and whether they are appropriate anymore, whether people have moved on or not. And there were so many comments back about that that I thought we'd do a little temperature check by featuring some of the common themes. And so we'll start with Rage Rider, who said, typically, when I was a lot younger, I wanted the loudest can possible, but not for a long time now. And then Arthur Schragay said, I am old. The stock CB650R exhaust is loud for me. So I think that's a reflection of what you were saying last time round, mate. Mm-hmm. People are just getting more sensible as they age. Yeah. And probably the general biking audience is aging. Let's face it.
Yeah, our audience probably, yes, exactly that.
I said the general biking audience, mate. Don't go after our audience.
No, we're getting older and we're getting, you know, a little bit more mature. So our audience is growing up with us. I agree. I still stand by that completely. I will die on that sword. Yeah, when you first get it, definitely for the first few, you're like, oh yeah, as loud as I possibly can. And then at a certain point you go, I'm going deaf, so I need to change it.
Indeed. You got to save those money makers, mate. When you're editing videos, you can't do it without exceptional hearing. Exactly. You need dog levels of hearing to get all the cuts right. And so that's part of it as well, probably. Ass Wetman says, I got cut up in Boston and the driver said they didn't see or hear me. I've retrofitted some louder slip-ons to my Harley ST. I don't even know what a Harley ST is. Harley ST. Lowrider ST, maybe. Anyway, not obnoxious, but louder. With all the distractions for drivers, we need all the help we can get. Tim.
Yes.
We both used to commute through London.
Yeah, still do.
But I'm a bit out of the loop now. Mm. But would you still say that's a factor in those moments when people kind of move over and nearly knock you off?
Yeah, sometimes. What you can't do is slap a loud exhaust on your bike and just go, everyone's going to hear me. Problem solved, and get mad at people when they don't, because someone might be blasting Taylor Swift for all you know and they can't hear your exhaust until obviously you're a lot closer to them. So it's not a hard and fast rule, and you can't start riding like everyone's gonna hear or see you. You still need to ride defensively would be my tip regardless. But I've definitely had the experience. I had a Yamaha Virago with a very loud, that was obnoxiously loud, and I didn't fit it, obviously. But driving through traffic with that, I could see people like four cars down start to move over. I was like, oh, this does work to a certain degree, because that was quite loud. And because it was a twin, it's a lower kind of decibel. I think it's a little bit worse when it's like four-cylinder, three-cylinder. That really does get into your ears a bit. But with a two-cylinder, it doesn't quite hit your ears quite, you know, as badly as it can with others. So you can get away with a slightly louder sound and it still sounds somewhat sweet. But yeah, I could see cars way off in the distance, parting like the Red Sea. So it does work. Yeah, but like I say, go with caution.
It's got to be one factor amongst many. And the main one is riding like people haven't seen you, I suppose.
Yes.
But it still maybe can help in certain scenarios. We always say as well, it's projecting out the back. And so there is perhaps room for an urban exhaust design, which maybe points out the back and points out the front. So that when you give it a blip.
Yeah, trumpets it to the people at the front. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And then also, we've got 1148 with the worst noise offenders are 125 riders that try to make their bikes sound more powerful. Sounds effing horrible. And you were just saying a twin sounds all right.
Yes.
A four, bit more irritating.
A little bit screamy sometimes, yeah.
A triple? Similar to a four, maybe. But I think a single has to be probably, I agree, the most irritating sound of a loud exhaust.
I mean, as a biker, yeah, if you're in the high street and you hear that 125 with the L plates and Deliveroo stickers all over it come sailing past you and you can hear it from miles away, you do tend to be like, oh, mate, give it a rest. It is a little bit annoying. And also, you know that they're sort of colouring somebody's opinion of bikers, and you're like, but I'm a biker as well, and I don't do that. Please don't judge
me
for the same.
Mate, non-bikers don't care if you've got an authentic V-twin or... They don't care.
No, I know. Like, but what I'm saying is, like,
not all bikers are bad because we're not all riding singles.
Well, exactly. No, but one, like, two, they tar us all with the same brush. So you get like a 125 who's darting in and out of traffic, riding obnoxiously with an exhaust which annoys even other bikers, and you're there going, please don't think all bikers are like that, because I don't ride like that and I don't sound like that when I'm out. And yeah, mine sounds a lot nicer.
Mine's got a much nicer...
The nuances of an Italian V-twin. Yeah.
Exactly. I think this is maybe not judgmental. What am I going to say? I'm sort of making prejudices around this sort of rider or maybe the brand, and I don't have any hard... statistical evidence to support it with a large sample size. So this is a big caveat.
Okay.
But when I picture in my head, small bike with like a straight through, and it'll be the cheapest eBay straight through system they could get. Yeah. I'm thinking straight away, wait, on three, say which bike you're thinking of.
Oh, okay.
One, two, three, Yamaha R125.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
R125 or MT, is it MT125?
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
That was excellent.
Yeah. It's always that.
Wow, then that's enough. I don't need to go and do a large-scale study of this because 100%. We just...
Yeah, you were two for two.
And that wasn't in the show notes.
Exactly.
Yeah, anyway, it really does remind me of a small dog that's barking away. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yes.
Just like, chill out, mate. You're a little dog.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. No one's got a problem with that. You're just protesting too much, drawing more attention to yourself. Yeah. And then big dog's going to come and...
Oh, you're the big dog. You're going to gobble
Wait,
out.
Wait, hang on. I'm lost in my analogy. But do you know what I mean? You're riding around on an R125, like, oh, look at me with my big bad bike.
Yeah.
An R1 with a stock exhaust is always going to roll up and just smoke you. Yeah. So don't draw attention to yourself. I'd go stealth if I was on one of those little bikes. Anyway, not at all stealth. Moving on to our second regular segment. Would be Bike of the Week. And if people have got submissions for Bike of the Week, leave them in the comments below. It's got to be something weird and wonderful. Last week we had the Pan America that somebody turned into an enduro style build, which was one of the most nonsensical things I've ever seen in terms of motorcycle builds, but it kind of worked. And that's what made it impressive. But this week we've got up for sale at Bonhams, I think, for about $51,000 starting price, a bike called the White Lock Tinker Toy, which is a 48 cylinder 4.2 liter Kawasaki.
Yes,
it's a slab of a thing, isn't it, mate?
Sir, you have outdone yourself finding this one. It is, I wish I it, this was my first reaction, because it probably would have blown the microphone out. I love this.
Do you?
I love everything about this bike. Yeah. I mean, just the fact that it was 48 cylinder, right? Just that description. Now your brain, if you're not looking at this image at the same time as us, it's trying to work out, where are these cylinders located? How would you fit 48 cylinders in there? How big are these cylinders going to be?
Okay. I mean, well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
8 banks. And there's 2 rows there. That'd be 16.
Mm.
3 rows would make 24. Oh, so it's 3 rows of 8, basically. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of 16 Kawasaki KH250 3-cylinder 2-stroke engines. Oh, no, arranged into 6 banks. Yeah, 6 banks of 8. And that's how they've achieved it. Just human centipeding them together, unfortunately. Sorry, I had to say that.
It's accurate.
And that makes 4.2 litres in total, which is quite something. And when I was watching the startup videos of this that I found on YouTube, he's got his own YouTube channel where the builder posts them. I think he's called Simon Whitelock. That's it. He posts the startups and stuff. I mean, the thing that blew my mind, mate, sorry, watching it, is one of the videos where firstly, they have a 50cc 2-stroke single cylinder engine out of a bike that is used as the starter motor for this 48 cylinder bike, which in itself is crazy.
Super practical.
Yeah, so start that one. Probably kickstart that one. Yeah. And then try and get it to turn this engine over. And the 50cc two-stroke wasn't strong enough to turn the engine over and start pulling the air in and stuff. And so they were just like, oh, back to the drawing board, and got a 125 single-cylinder engine. And that was just about good enough to get it ticking over. Now, have you watched the startup video or not?
Well, I listened to it, yeah. You're going to say that it sort of blows the microphone out. There's just nothing can contain that level of noise. Yeah, I hope it sounds better in real life.
I want to know what 48 cylinders sounds like.
So do
like,
I. And
I've watched maybe 10 videos of it, and you can hear the 125 single starter motor going, you know, pop, 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 pop. And then as soon as they start up the 48-cylinder engine, every device that bike has ever been recorded on seems incapable
just
of...
white noise, just, yeah. Just
processing that.
Literally the only way to see that is in real life. You're going to have to go and find this thing. Maybe put a bid in, park that up, scrap the SV. This is what you want to be customised. Actually, don't even need to customise it. It's done for you. It's all done for you. It's an absolute goer.
I'm just going to email Bonhams and say, I'm interested in making a bid. I just need to come and see it first.
Yeah.
I can explain, though, in very simple logic, why no camera on this planet can deal with the output in terms of volume. And you just need to look at that side-on picture of it, and you can see the size of the engine and all the cylinders in all their banks. And then look at the exhaust. It's just like a Delcovic, 200 quid. Do you know what I mean? Like, the ratios are off there.
Oh, yeah. It's also, it's got like a two-stroke thing coming out the back as well. What is that?
Coming out the back of where?
In between the exhausts. There's like a third exhaust, third leg thing.
Is that for the starter?
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Is it a teeny
one? That makes sense. You're right. So, yeah.
Oh, dear. They say that each of those engines could make 32 horsepower. This is on Silodrome. We found this story. Another excellent website. Thoroughly recommend. Theoretically, that means that if you stick 16 32 horsepower engines together, theoretically, it could make 512. Although, logically, it probably... that's like very basic maths that probably doesn't play out in reality.
No, that sounds right to me. I can see no problem with that logic at all.
It looks absolutely fantastic. The other thing that blew my mind about it, not blew my mind, but interesting detail, let's say, is that they used a Goldwing front end and then custom made that big section of frame.
Yeah.
I think at the back end is custom as well, actually. Why did I have that in the notes? Custom frame, but with the Goldwing front end, which a Goldwing, if you're looking for a beefy front end, it's an older one, you know, classic Goldwing. But if you're looking for a beefy front end that can deal with that sort of
500 horsepower,
mass.
Yeah, 500 ponies, I mean, you're going to need a pretty beefy front end on that. I mean, look at the stoppers on it as well. So, God forbid, it actually does have 500 horsepower, which it definitely doesn't. You get that thing in a straight line.
You're going to need some brakes.
Yeah, trying to stop that thing on them is it's going to be exciting.
Looking at it now, again, this side-on picture, which I'm obsessed with. Do you know what it looks like, actually? It looks like a pair of novelty motorcycle bookends. And you put the books in the middle.
Yeah.
Or the other thing it looks a little bit like is if you ever try AI image generation.
And just type in bike, just motorcycle, and it will do something like this.
Classic motorcycle with a big engine.
It can't handle it at all. It's still not quite at that level yet. So yeah, you still end up getting something as janky as this. The thing that immediately struck me is how long do your arms need to be to...
Wait, come on, they fitted bars nearer the rider, surely, have they? Oh, no, they haven't.
No!
What?
How long would your arms need to be? Stretch Armstrong's holding onto this thing. Either that, or you are fully laying prone on that tank and just having a little sleep there.
I wonder if it's built to be ridden or not.
Oh, this is built to be ridden.
Maybe it isn't.
Clearly, this is a performance machine. This...
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, you know, anyone who's listening on audio, definitely go and have a look at that. The White Lock Tinker Toy. Maybe that's actually a clue in the name. Is it just for tinkering?
I think so, yeah.
And not for riding, yeah. But, yeah, fantastic looking thing. And hats off to anyone who does anything that is obviously so time intensive, expensive, probably immensely frustrating, but you get something... quite fantastic out the other end of all those years, probably, of building that. I think that's it for today, Tim. Lovely to speak to you, as always.
As always, same, yeah.
And we'll be back next week.
Bye.